we are now connected to Artem Zakhachenko, a Ukrainian media expert holding a PhD in social communications and working for the NGO CutUA, which I've just been told they had funding from USAID until recently, and now they don't anymore. So fuck Trump, fuck Musk, obviously. And and Artem is here to tell us about how Russia is deepening divisions in the Ukrainian society. Take it away.
So it is you.
Hi guys. So yeah, my name is Artem Zakharchenko. I'm from Kyiv, but now from my mother's home from Chernihiv. You can see this interior here. It is nice to see you, despite I don't see you. I even don't know how much people are there, but that will not stop me. Okay, so I'm head of NGO CatUA, that means Communication Analysis Team Ukraine. I launched this NGO in the beginning, at the very first day of full-scale invasion of Russia to Ukraine, and we started to help our militaries and civil authorities. And my report was on the previous event last year, your event, that, but organizers told me that it was poor sound, so they asked me to repeat something, but I don't want to repeat the same, because as they told me that you guys gathered here not to deep into interesting but complicated topics, but mostly you gathered here to get something interesting, so I will try to do it and to provide you with something interesting. And let me share my screen. So, how Russians deepen division lines in Ukrainian society? And let me start with a recent topic. Probably you heard about the assassination of Andriy Poroby. That was the former speaker of the Ukrainian parliament, and he was assassinated on August 30, 2025, so it's less than 1 month ago. That is the photo of his killer with a glove backpack, and yeah, that was him. And he was the member of former President Petro Poroshenko's fraction. Maybe you know, I'm not sure that you are familiar with Ukrainian politics, but that was former president who worked with patriotic agenda, and he has really a big enemy. His enemy is Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. They are competitors in political life, and they don't like each other at all. So, when this assassination happened, Russian bots tried to convince Ukrainians that Poroby was killed on Zelensky's order. That was maybe quite logical, that political opponents are trying to make other opponents make their opponents weaker, and so on and so on. So some people even started to share this opinion from Russian bot farms. But then what happened then? What was the plan? They thought that they will convince Poroshenko to accuse Zelensky on murdering Poroby, and then military personnel who sympathize with Poroshenko will act rashly, and then combat-ready units are being withdrawn from the front to suppress unrest, and then the front is crumbling, and the Russians are advancing. That is the profit. That was not the thing that was actually happened, because yeah, the plan was foiled at the very first point, because Poroshenko immediately declared that Vorobyev had been killed by Russia. Of course, it was killed by Russia, and later the arrested killer confirmed this. So what's the conclusion? The conclusion is that Ukrainians are ready for the challenges of information warfare. When Russia tried to divide Ukrainian society on Poroshenko's supporters and Zelensky supporters and make a clash between them, Ukrainians stopped this plan. Yeah, but are Germans ready? I can see you, so I don't know whether you are. what are the ideas on your faces? Yeah, but I will try to guess that Germans are not so ready as Ukrainians, and that was the idea why I'm presenting this. To you, because we have some experience with interfering with Russia, and that is, yeah, that is comparatively successful experience. Yeah, we have some losses in information war, but in general, we are advancing in this situation, and probably we can share with you some piece of our experience. Let's continue. Political divide is not the only one in Ukraine that Russians exploit. Of course, among others, there is a dispute between left-wing and right-wing activists. Probably that is very familiar to German history and to German present situation. Yeah, as for Ukraine, we have right-wing activists who are present in many Ukrainian units. Here is Azov, but it's not the only unit where right-wing activists are present. Probably I should point that you should not believe Russian propaganda that Azov unit is a Nazi battalion. Of course not, and that was proved by many researchers, by many many activists and so on, but Russia still says that that is a Nazi battalion, and judge people who were in this battalion and then brigade, and as for now it's corps. So there are a lot of people who are right-wing activists, but there are also a lot of people who are LGBT activists among the famous military personnel who have distinguished themselves in battle. So these all are parts of our military forces. And what if they leave the war zone and start fighting to each other? So the lines of division between Ukrainians often are exploited by Russians to make us weaker. And this one is also often exploited because a lot of right-wing activists are also influenced by Russian bots and are convinced to do something with this leftish LGBT society. Okay. Maybe 2 years ago we made a research about different topics that divide Ukrainian society. And divisions do not arise on their own. As a rule, they are caused by caused or exaggerated by certain trigger topics in online discussions. Russia looks for such topics and try to make them stronger and push on both sides to act more radical, let's say. But these are not all the topics that Russia focuses on. some topics have a very high percentage of Russian impact, and other topics have completely absent Russian presence. Yeah, these are maybe, probably you don't know most of these topics, but we will stop now on one of them. It is electricity and blackouts, because people, Russia started massive shelling of Ukrainian energy utilities in the end of 2022, and then repeated this on the next years, and now they also say that they will do the same this autumn, so we are waiting whether they will succeed on it or not. But physical shelling, it was not the only the only leverage, let's say, that applied to Ukrainian society. They also provided specific information campaigns to enforce this influence, and these are very different messages in such a campaign. And this campaign also made visible several different lines of division that already existed in Ukrainian society. Yeah, this Russian campaign of blackouts was relatively unsuccessful because people didn't do something unexpected to Ukrainian government, and that was a comparatively controlled situation. But of course, this topic triggered more than one dividing line. Actually, we found at least four dividing lines. The first one between citizen and civil authorities, because citizens tried to convince civil authorities that they hide electricity, they sell them abroad, and so on. Between citizens and oligarchs, Ukrainian oligarchs, it's a separate topic, but they tried to convince that oligarchs steal their electricity. Residents of different regions or different neighborhoods, here Eastern citizen depicted and Western citizen, so sometimes they told that Western people from Western regions always have electricity and we don't have it for a lot of hours per day, and so on and so on. And yeah, of course, between patriots and those people who went under pro-Russian influence, this line of division is also very visible. So there is one topic and at least four dividing lines that are deepened by this influence. And here is the list of most visible messages in this campaign. And you can see yellow parts that provided by pro-Ukrainian top bloggers or media with high audience reach, and the blue one is about pro-Russian bloggers. And we can see that some messages from this campaign were promoted en masse only by Russians, but others were picked up by ordinary citizens. What did Russians promote in this situation? The authorities lie about the real situation with electricity in the country, suppress protests, and authorities also are inactive. That was mostly promoted by Russian top bloggers, pro-Russian top bloggers in Ukraine. It isn't fair that some have electricity and others do not. Ukrainians are protesting against blackouts. That was mostly promoted by pro-Ukrainian bloggers or media, and but Russian impact also was important. Ukrainians complaining about blackouts are ungrateful, playing along with Russian propaganda. That was mostly promoted by pro-Ukrainian users, but that was also a message that divided Ukrainians on different paths. So even when you are fighting against this line of division, you also divide people. And so on and so on and so on. So you can see how different messages are applied to one unified goal to divide Ukrainians. They use very different messages, but their goal is the same in each case. And that is the slide from our research, but here are the lines of division between different parts of Ukrainian society impacted by different triggering topics. So that is not only the electricity and blackouts topic. These are all topics we analyzed on that time. And here we can see these borders around these lines of division that were significantly impacted by Russian propaganda. We can see this religious line of division between locals and visitors during this flow of refugees inside Ukraine and outside Ukraine, between those who left and those who stayed. That is important line of division in Ukrainian society, between military and civilians, between proponents of traditional values and modern values, and so on and so on and so on. So we can see that Russia works a lot on a division of our society. And what about German society? Can you see the same tendencies? Probably yes, but let's look a bit deeper. Let's step into another case that is not that research I mentioned on the beginning. That is another research where we tried to look on strategies of Russian propaganda. Probably you heard that Russians like to provide very different versions of the reality, and they just try to make truth invisible. That nobody will believe the truth when there are a lot of different versions of the reality. That is only the part of the truth, of course, because they do this, they apply this strategy only in a case when they are not ready. That is good example. Probably you heard about a mass massacre in Bucha. Bucha is a small city near Kyiv, near our capital, that was occupied on the beginning of the full-scale invasion. And Russian soldiers killed a lot of civilians there. And that people had knew about that only after these territories became liberated. And that fact was unexpected to Russians. They didn't didn't expect that there will arise so huge wave of condemnation on them. And they faced this huge wave, and they tried to look for different types of lie. And so they were not ready. So at the very first day when this information became popular, the unprepared stream of various contradictory versions with significant involvements of bot appeared in the pro-Russian internet. But that was only the case when they were not ready. Actually, they don't like such approach. They prefer well-prepared versions, and in the cases when they were prepared, they act and promote one single version of the events. For example, that was so when they crashed the dam of Kakhovka Lake on Dnipro, and a huge flood flooded the Kherson city and other cities. Then they had one single version, and the same they do when they were unprepared, but they have time. So on the beginning, when Bucha situation became visible, they tried to make different versions, but then in a month, in May 2022, they started to promote different version, a well-prepared unified version disseminated through the top propagandists. Here, there were mostly bots and some military bloggers, but on the second wave, they used top propagandists to promote a unified version of this event. Here we can see the total coverage of the second wave, based on Bocquet's citation, was higher than all other versions. Alexander Kotz is a military blogger. Sergey Andreev, Maria Zakharova is a speaker of Foreign Ministry of Russia, and so on and so on. A lot of different speakers were applied to promote different versions, but Adrian Bocquet, who was so-called French journalist, actually, he was not. He was used, and his words were cited in the second wave of the lie about Bucha. So we can see that on the beginning they apply different versions, but then they put all their forces to promote another unified version. So you can see when Russians promote different versions of the reality, probably they are not ready for the event and they have to lie on their way. But when they have this unified version, that seems that they were prepared for this event, and that was not unexpected to them. That sometimes that is important when something happened, like Andriy Poruby's death, and we looked whether there are different versions or they tell one story, and so we make a decision about whether these were Russians who killed them or this were somebody else. And that is key arguments of Russian propaganda about Bucha, and we can see how they applied different versions of what they say happened there. Ukrainians shelled Bucha after the departure of Russians, so they tried to convince people that that were not Russians who killed all these people, that were Ukrainians who shelled Bucha from artillery. The corpses were moved from other places, also they told. No one reported corpses in the city for 4 days. Bodies lie, look unnatural. Characters of stories about Bucha are actors, or the Russians behaved humanly in Bucha, and so on and so on and so on. So they tried to convince us in very different ways. And also, it is important, they usually, in each information campaign, propaganda campaign, they have one key emotion around which they build their campaign. In the case of Bucha, they built this campaign around the anger. But and other emotions were comparatively weak. But as we can compare different their campaigns, because this second our research was held on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different cases. Yeah, of course, Bucha has the most unified emotion, but comparatively similar situation was in other different topics that Russian propaganda applied. Almost all campaigns are built on negative emotions, as you can see. Only lie about destroyed equipment when they told in the beginning of the war they destroyed, for example, Patriots. They do it after that, but at the beginning that was lie. So, of course, they built this on joy, or sometimes they applied love, as in the case of fake about humans. So you can see that some prominent emotions also they used in some cases. And of course, the question for the end of my presentation is the same. Do you see any similarities with the situation in Germany? I'm ready for questions. Thank you for your attention. And probably it will be better if I will be able to see you.
Yes.
Yeah, either you can say your question here and Mol will relay it, but preferably it would be nice if you have a question that you walk up to the stage and talk into the notebook directly, because then Artem can see you. However, do note that this will mean you will show up in the recording via that very small cutout in the Jitsi software. So if you want to ask a question, that's your options. Do we have any questions from the audience? I'm actually not seeing any so far.
Okay, is it about being on the camera? Who has questions without being on the camera? Okay, there's a question. Do you want to come to us or not?
No.
No. Okay, then I will relay it. Go ahead.
So I wanted to ask basically, first of all, like, how precise can something like this communication warfare actually be when you think about the fact that in comparison to like older propaganda or false information, so like how precise can they measure the effect of their own lies, basically, measure the effects of the bots? Or is it something that is completely chaotic and then you can't see the outcome, the effect, and yeah, if you get what I want to say?
Did you understand?
Excuse me, but I don't hear the question. Maybe you can just repeat it into the mic.
Okay, one moment.
So, yeah, what is, how precise is the effect of these targeted bot campaigns? So is that actually something that can be measured, or is it based on hope that it actually targets? How is the effectiveness of these campaigns?
So the effectiveness of bot campaigns depends on the topic. And it is not, let's say, it is not only bot campaigns. They apply very different instruments, and bots are just one of these instruments. They also apply the speeches of top persons of Russia, including Putin. They also apply top bloggers, top propagandists like Solovyov, and so on and so on and so on. And the effectiveness of these campaigns depends. And when Ukrainian society is ready, more or less, it will not be so effective. But in societies, maybe like German, I'm not sure, in societies that are not prepared so well to the situation, of course, people believe much more. And we believed much more in, for example, 2014, when Russia started massive campaigns on a Ukrainian audience. But since then, we developed a lot of instruments, and our organization is one of these instruments. Of course, people believe more in topics that are on the basement of this Maslow pyramid. So when these are topics about electricity, about their security, about something like that, people mostly believe in fakes, and that needs that is hard to convince them that it's not truth. But when people speak about values, about LGBT rules or right-wing outlook, they are not so convinced. For most of the Ukrainian people, that is not the topic to discuss. So let's be prepared to the situation when Russia will target your basic needs.
Do we have any other questions? Yeah.
Can you elaborate on the divide between people who stayed and who left the country and how it might impact after the war between those two factions?
Also, please repeat it.
We have someone nice here.
Can you elaborate on the divide between the people who stayed in Ukraine and the people who left, especially in 2022, and whether there will be problems in reconciling these divides after the war?
Oh, yeah, that is huge line of division. And we understand that some of people will not return to Ukraine, and Ukraine will probably forget about them, or will not forget when some politicians will use them to gather these votes. But for those people who will come back, that will be huge line of division when they will be accused in the situation that we have a lot of troubles here in Ukraine, but you spend your time in Europe in this more or less good life, and you will come back and you want something from our state, from us. So even now we hear these voices, and when people will start to come back, it will be a huge challenge for Ukrainian society, for Ukrainian authorities, for probably NGOs, to keep peace between these categories of citizens.
So, some more questions?
And if you can, here in Germany, support some people who are Ukrainians and you know them, to support them now, to support them when they will try to come back to Ukraine, to support their comeback, it will be also good.
Okay, if there's no... Oh, no, there are more questions. Otherwise, I also had a question. You can come in front of the camera. I think Artyom would like it to see you.
Yes.
Sure.
Hello.
Hello.
I wanted to know, because your question, if we feel this kind of division also in Germany, and me for myself, I feel it very, very much. And my question is, like, because you said, like, Ukrainian society is experiencing this at least since 2014. Mm-hmm. Are there any, ways of solution, or like ways to cope with the situation that you can, maybe that you've experienced in this period of time, that could maybe also help us to cope with it, or to have solutions to unite more again, or to just make sure that this separation isn't getting deeper, out of this division. Thank you.
So there are two ways to work with it, and probably we should apply both of them. The first way is reactive, just react and debunk Russian information campaigns. That is the first way. You should, of course, do this, but usually that is not enough to do this. You also should act proactively, not only reactively, but also proactively. What do I mean? Both lines, both sides between both sides of this line, for example, power authorities and opposition, left-wing, right-wing activists, and so on and so on. They have their own narratives, how they describe why do they feel that their side is important. For example, right activists have this narrative about why they should, I don't know, come back to old good times, make America great again, and so on. And left-wing activists also have their own narrative, their own story. Why do their struggle is important, struggle for human rights, and so on and so on. When we have two different narratives, on the one side and on other side, it is also possible to make unifying narrative about why these two sides need each other. They also need each other. For example, authorities always need opposition to control them. Opposition always need authority because they are the authorities now, and and sometimes combating with authorities is combating with their own country. And the same is about traditionalists and progressive people. Yeah, they need each other to make this movement more to the future more effective. So you have to provide some narrative that will show them that they need each other. For example, as for Ukrainians who lived and the Ukrainian who stayed, they have very different experience, and they have to share this experience with each other, and that will make Ukraine stronger. For example, people who Ukrainians who now live in Germany, they have an experience to live in other societies, to apply European practices and so on, but Ukrainians who live now in Ukraine, they have completely different experience, that they have experience to live in very hard situations, and that is also important to future rebuild of Ukraine. So you have to act proactively and promote this unifying narrative, and that will unify your country. And it is important to tell about the danger of Russian propaganda. You have to emphasize that Russia tries to make the clash between different parts of German society. And that should be the idea that everybody knows, and that will help you to become more unified.
Okay, there's another question. And you will also see the questionnaire, that's very nice. You can have this microphone. And this little light, you have to look inside.
Yes. Hi. Actually, I had kind of the same question, but I maybe would elaborate it a bit. Or ask a follow-up question. I think it's, I also feel that you have like this really big wave of shit, of some fake news and so on, also being here. And like when we talk about this first method of reacting, like debunking with fake news and so on, maybe you and maybe, or maybe also some people from the audience, I don't know, maybe you could, I'm wondering if there are maybe like websites or media who especially deal with this topic of countering with the Russian propaganda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. I don't know, unfortunately, German websites that debunk Russian fakes, but in Ukraine we have kind of ecosystem of organizations who debunk information, and that is various very different organizations. We have state debunkers, anti-fake organizations, for example, websites Pravdi, that is provided by Ukrainian authorities We have several fact-checking organizations that focus on different topics. For example, Detector Media, that is a big Ukrainian organization. And yes, Stop Fake, it's also maybe the oldest Ukrainian anti-fake organization, and so on and so on. I think that in Germany also should have some of such websites, but you have to remember that it's not enough. It's completely not enough because fake news, it's actual facts are only the first level of the impact. There are also three other other levels of information impact. The second impact is messages, and in my presentation you have seen these plots of messages and the audience reach of each message. So therefore the third one is agenda setting. It's you can debunk fake news, but you will help to make this fake news visible. And the fourth level is narrative. So you have to tell stories that will be stronger, will be more interesting than Russian stories. At the beginning of the full-scale invasion, all Ukrainians were united by one story of our struggle. And they mostly didn't believe in Russian fakes just because they didn't interfere with their outlook, with their own narrative. Then it became a bit more complicated to make this narrative interesting because this Ukrainian society became disorganized, and that was natural because they became tired of war. But at the beginning, they believed in our own narrative and didn't believe in any Russian fake. And that was really cool. So you have to work on all levels, not only debunking the information. You have to recreate your German national narrative. You have to remember why you live in one country. And that will become you resistible to any information inputs.
Yeah, I think we have time for one more question. I saw a hand before. There's one. Okay. You are the lucky one. Do you want to come to the front or? Okay, we'll do it from here.
Hello. I have a question because I look at the conflict from a, I think, communist or anarchist perspective. And I don't think that patriotism in any country can be the solution for the problems we see in the world. And now the question is, is that a message that Russia is also trying to send out to the world in the hopes that it will reduce patriotism, for example, in Germany or Ukraine? Or is that something that they shy away from because they fear their own people will be agitated against their corrupt authority?
I also need repetition.
Yeah. I'm coming. I will do my best to summarize it. So the question is, from a leftist perspective that is skeptical of patriotism, whether this is a perspective that is also used by the Russians to like instill anti-patriotism in the Ukrainians, or whether that's something that they'd rather not touch because of fear that it might spread to Russians as well. Like, they are obviously playing the patriotic game just as much, if not more.
That is air alert here in Chernihiv, but I will still answer the question. I'm not sure that I have got it well. So whether Russians deal with some topics and with other they don't, excuse me, okay, can you please...
Like, so on the left, there is a natural skepticism of patriotism and nationalism, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And mm-hmm. whether the Russians are harnessing that or whether they are fearful that trying to tap into that narrative would spill over to Russia.
Actually, I spent 1 year in Germany at the beginning of the full-scale invasion, and I also faced this situation when I... it is natural for Ukrainian to tell that I am a patriot of Ukraine and I wear this embroidered short and so on and so on. And for German, it's usually, I lived in Bremen. It was mostly leftish city. Yeah, so that was interesting situation when people didn't tell that they are Germans and they proud that they are Germans. Actually, that is not the case when you have to come back to the image of German that was, for example, in 19th century or in the beginning of 20th century. You have to, you can create any that you wish. You can create very modern image of German, very different from that situation that was before. But you have to do it to unify your people for struggle, because when you don't, when people don't know why should you protect your home from Russians, they will come and they will take you. As, for example, the best situation when people didn't have their narrative and they lose the war. It's Afghanistan, when people of the government soldiers did not understand why should they fight for their democratic, let's say, democratic Afghanistan country. But Talibs understood why should they fight. So they took advantage and that was very fast, several months, and all the Afghanistan was the Taliban. So you have to know why should you fight for your country. And that is probably impossible without any modern view on your country and on your nationality.
All right. Thank you very much, Artem. Please give them some love.
Thank you.